Welcome to Just Us and the Climate, a podcast by the Climate Justice Coalition, where we bring climate change back down to earth and show how it's not only a crisis, but an opportunity to build a better and more just world.
My name is Busi, and I'm the Climate Justice Coalition's coordinator. Today, we'll be joined by Heidi Swart, who is the Research and Journalism Coordinator for Intel Watch, a non-profit organization based in South Africa, dedicated to strengthening public oversight of state and private intelligence actors in Africa and around the world. Welcome to our podcast, Heidi.
Hi there, Busi. Thank you so much for having me.
Thank you. So today we'll be chatting a bit about the General Intelligence Laws Amendment Bill and why you should be worried about it. So for our audience members that aren't familiar with the General Intelligence Laws Amendment Bill, could you just take us through what this is, what it's about?
Sure. So I'm sure your audience will recall that there was such a thing as the Zondo Commission Interstate Capture. That commission also looked at the State Security Agency, and it was found that there was widespread malfeasance. There was a looting of the Secret Services Account Act, which is what the State Security Agency is supposed to use for its undercover and secret operations. There was also just generally a power grab in the agency. So essentially, our intelligence services were also captured. And because the intelligence services were captured, Judge Zondo found, it contributed directly to state capture, because at the start, before state capture was really orchestrated, those in the State Security Agency wanted already to investigate the Guptas. That in the end didn't happen because those people were not listened to, and in the end they left the agency. So that's the one thing that gives us proof that there's a ton of problems with the intelligence services in this country. The other thing that gives us good cause for concern, and that brought about the need for this law, is what's known as the High Level Review Panel into the State Security Agency. This panel was convened in 2018 by President Cyril Ramaphosa, and it was supposed to take an inside look at the State Security Agency to see what was wrong. And so this panel found, and this was even before the Zondo Commission, found a string of problems. Again, the money that was there was not being managed properly. And there were problems with the power hierarchy, because what you have is the way the agency looks now, and this was orchestrated to be this way deliberately under President Zuma, is to have one super director that's in charge of everything in the agency, be it their domestic intelligence branch, their foreign intelligence branch, their training academy for intelligence, and their interception services, being the electronic communication surveillance services, where they can, you know, catch on to what you're saying on your phone, etc. So major issues were major oversight issues. The idea with this bill, it's called the General Intelligence Laws Amendment Bill. It amends more than a dozen laws, but it's a wide-ranging bill, and it's meant to address these problems that we know exist. But it does very little to do that. The only thing that it really does is to say, okay, we're going to split the agency up into a domestic department, a foreign department, a training academy, and the interception / surveillance facilities. And each one of those is going to have a boss. So there won't be one big super boss running and controlling everything. Okay. That's the one good thing that it does. Sets up some competition between the departments, if you want to call it that, so that one guy doesn't hold the purse strings, and so that one guy can't just fire everybody. And it doesn't do that at all. What it really does is it tries to do that, right? It splits the agencies up. But in the end, it doesn't really provide for anything else to stop malfeasance. So there's such a thing as an Inspector General of Intelligence, right? And this is a independent body standing out, that's so supposedly independent body that's supposed to be outside of the agency, where the public can go and say, look, I think I'm being harassed by the intelligence services, or I think they're actually eavesdropping on my conversations. I think they're reading my emails. Now, the other thing that we were hoping it would fix, that this law should fix, but that it doesn't fix, is the powers of the Inspector General of Intelligence, which is the body that the public can approach if they think that the intelligence services are guilty of wrongdoing. So the Inspector General can actually then investigate the services. And what happens then is once they've investigated, they issue what's called a certificate. And the certificate then goes to Parliament's Joint Standing Committee on Intelligence, which is basically the representatives of we, the people. And they are, they're supposed to oversee the agency on a parliamentary level. So what's happened over the years is that basically the committee is where the Inspector General's recommendations have gone to die. He gives them recommendations and nothing happens because they also don't have very strong powers. They unfortunately, like the Inspector General, cannot make legally binding recommendations. So you sort of have to hope that the intelligence services will, you know, go with it and improve themselves. But of course, it's entirely within their power to say, okay, well, that's nice. I'm carrying on with business as usual. So those are some of the issues that we wanted this bill to fix, but it does not do that. In fact, it makes things worse because what is also now included, and this is where other nonprofits should actually sit up and listen, is it allows for the security vetting of any person or institution of national security interest. Basically, what that means is the following. Security vetting is a very invasive process whereby they decide if a person is trustworthy or if they potentially pose a threat to what's known as national security. Such a person normally works for the state. They're either contracted or they work as a government employee and they deal with sensitive information and state secrets, national key points, you know, classified stuff that we don't want getting into the hands of foreign agents. So there's a very specific purpose for vetting. What this bill now proposes, in essence, is that vetting can be used to investigate anybody. So for example, if the services think that you are posing a threat to national security, and by the way, that's a very broad definition. It's very ill-defined. It can basically be anything, as the law stands now. So if they decide that you're a threat, then they can vet you, which means they can intercept your phone calls. They can put you through a lie detector test. They can pull your medical records, your financial records, any information that they deem relevant. And they don't need a warrant from the court. They don't need what's called an interception. Actually, they do need an interception direction. They still will have to go through the court for that if they want to intercept your communications, but technically, legally, they would be able to follow that process. So in other words, it's basically a criminal investigation, but with fewer safeguards, because you are compelled to hand over your information. So the implication here is and this is their motivation for it, is that if they think that your organization or your nonprofit or you might be involved in what they call money laundering and terrorism financing. And again, this is their excuse. Then they can vet you and supposedly, because this isn't clear in the law either, supposedly shut you down or perhaps just gain a ton of information on you, which is a great springboard from which to conduct surveillance on you and on your organization. So the reason why we worried about this is because there was a first version in the of the bill, a first version approved by cabinet, which now seems to have disappeared into the ether, that explicitly said that they wanted to monitor and do security vetting of persons seeking to establish nonprofit organizations or religious institutions. So we know that that is their intention. And we know that their excuse for that is because they're saying they want to investigate money laundering and terrorism financing. But of course, we know what's happened in the past when the agency was captured. We know that the agency spied on Greenpeace. We know that they spied on the R2K, that they infiltrated the Fees Must Fall campaign, and all of this emerged during the Zondo Commission. So the problem here then is, if we had an agency we could trust, perhaps we could say, okay, yeah, sure, you know, go ahead and vet them if you think it's necessary. But we know from in the past that the agency has misused their extra legal powers, it seems, because they don't make use of the normal judiciary processes. And also, nowhere in the world is vetting used to investigate somebody who might be a criminal, or somebody who might be involved in crime. That's, vetting isn't used for that. It's used for government employees and contractors who specifically are going to be working with classified information. And it's just to see, is this person trustworthy, or are they going to leave a briefcase full of secrets on a bus because they're forgetful, or they've had too much to drink this morning? Or, I don't know, perhaps they're going to be, easily blackmailed because they're in debt. And the result of that will then be that they are wide open to exploitation by foreign actors trying to interfere with our security. Bottom line is, vetting is a very, very, very specific purpose, and it's very strange that our government now wants to employ this to basically investigate organizations. Non-profit organizations, etc. And that is sort of a worrying trend that we're seeing throughout the continent, throughout the African continent, this move towards vetting non-profit organizations because they might be a threat to the standing order. But it's something that we would expect of a autocratic government or a totalitarian regime, not something from our young democracy that was so hard fought for.
Thanks, Heidi. And you've really highlighted some of the red flags and why civil society in particular should be worried about this bill. But for the average South African, why should they be worried?
Okay, so here's the thing. We have elections coming up. And we also know for a fact that opposition parties have been, within the ANC, factions within the ANC, have been targeted by the agency. So it's election interference. In other words, what you will have with a bill like this is a veil of secrecy behind which the agency can go vet somebody who is a political opponent. Because that person might be, of national security interest. And again, the definition for national security interest is so broad that the intelligence services can very easily define a person as a threat. So that can, to answer your question succinctly, it can definitely undermine our democracy directly by facilitating interference with elections, simply because it can now allow the intelligence service to legally in, air quotes, actually conduct surveillance and infiltration of opposition parties or oppositional factions within one party. And that's basically the biggest threat. The second threat is that, and why people should be worried, is that people might not know it, but a lot of this country works because of the work that's being done in the nonprofit sector. The nonprofit sector picks up a big part of the work that the government isn't doing, but is supposed to be doing in terms of the constitution. So you do not want a government that can, in no democracy do you want a government that can undermine, the nonprofit sector, because without them, we really, as things stand, we are going to have a tremendous amount of trouble, delivering essential services. And now I'm talking about, basic services like basic needs, water, food, childcare, There's a ton of services like that. You don't want government interference with them apart from funding them. Here's the other thing. In terms of activism, there's a ton of organizations that put pressure on the government to change its laws. It's always been that way in South Africa. This law would then allow the governing party to shut down an organization that like that, theoretically. So one can again look at Greenpeace. They were classified as a national security threat because they climbed onto the wall at Coburg to hang a banner. I think that was about a decade ago, more than a decade ago. So just that got them classified as a threat because Coburg is obviously a sensitive site. The other theory, of course, is that they were very opposed to nuclear. And we know that the former president wanted the nuclear deal to go through. It has a very real impact on our society because you have these organizations that bring to light the corruption. And we have several of them. You have Corruption Watch, you have OUTA, that are very vocal. You don't want the government to be able to interfere with these guys. And the other thing is also why the average citizen should be worried is because, let's say you know somebody who knows somebody in the agency, right? You have a tiff with a friend of yours. Your friend knows somebody in the agency. They say, and this is an extreme example, but this can happen. And these things have happened in the past. I've interviewed people who've made an enemy of people inside intelligence services. That person with a connection inside the service, or maybe that person is inside the service, can then use their facilities and their authority to harass you. Maybe they can, pull your banking details, your banking activity, listen in on your phone calls, etc. So you don't want someone inside to be inside such an organization to at all be able to investigate someone if they're not definitely a threat to national security. So that's basically it. It can be weaponized. Vetting can be weaponized against ordinary person because somebody inside the agency has a grudge. It can be weaponized against political opponents because one wants to actually then undermine your political opponents and retain power. It can be used to undermine activism organizations that force the government into improving laws, etc., and that expose corruption. So many, many ways in which this law can be used to ultimately change the country, affect the country's course in a way that should concern everybody.
That's quite concerning. And I'd like us to maybe chat a bit about the public participation process. I know the dates changed several times for some of the hearings. Do you think the government has done enough to ensure public participation for this bill?
Man, the problem is that in essence, they're trying to rush the bill through. We are very surprised, actually, that they want to bring this bill into law, get it on the president's desk and signed before the next parliament is constituted. Parliament's going to dissolve, as far as I know, in May. And after that, we're going to have our elections. That means that they started the public participation process just before the December holidays. Which was already bad. Nobody can work over the holidays and the the new year. Then they said, okay, we're going to allow another 2 weeks. It wasn't another 2 weeks. We're going to allow another month they extended it by quite considerably. So that helped. Then everybody, I think, hopefully, more people got their submissions in. But for such a big bill, and for a bill that brings this many changes, I think even that wasn't really enough time. They also did, it wasn't enough time to do a thorough submission. we had to really scramble as civil society organizations to get everybody on board and to get people to conduct submissions because it was so rushed and because of the timing of it. So that's the one aspect. The other issue is that they did road shows, which meant that they went to the different provinces and asked people for input. But what happens with this kind of bill is that people don't always understand the content, and people don't always know what the hearing is really about. So people will go there to the hearing, and they have major issues in their communities, and very basic issues. You know, one issue that kept coming up, for example, was the problems with community police forums. So people would go to the meetings and complain to the call it the ad hoc committee on the General Intelligence Laws Amendment Bill, and complain to the ad hoc committee saying that they have problems X, Y, and Z. And then it becomes very difficult for the committee to use any of that. Because even if the complaints are legitimate. There's no doubt about that. People are really struggling. But it doesn't help the committee in any way to change the law because it doesn't actually pertain to the law. So they did get a lot of input, but how much of that input they could actually use for the bill is questionable. And I just don't think that there was enough time for us to do public awareness in order to enable communities to really criticize this constructively. I think that was an issue, that we simply didn't have time for outreach, community outreach, and saying, okay, folks, this is why the bill's an issue. This is why you need to speak up. This is why you can't just say you approve it. Yeah. So yes, the participation process, to my mind, has been rushed. And, the deadline was, for submissions was February the 14th. And many of us got our submissions in, but again, it was there were so many issues with it you could have used another month, to add another 100 pages to your submission. That's how big the problems with this bill were, and it's very strange because they've had since 2018 already they've known during the high level review panel. But since then, they've known they had to fix this stuff. But they still haven't, So it's actually quite shocking that they're taking, a couple of months, basically, to try and push this through.
Thank you. And so some critics have argued that this bill would turn South Africa into a national security state. What are your thoughts about this view?
Look, it could very well. It certainly lays the basis for it. The one thing that I think opens the risk for that is that that vetting provision where they can vet anybody who's of national security interest and they can decide who's of national security interest because it's such a broad definition. So yes. And then the other thing is that they're essentially going to have the power, if this bill goes through, to apprehend people. Right? Before they couldn't do that. The power of arrest lies with the police. And there's the whole Criminal Procedures Act. All of that codified in law. Nobody can just arrest somebody. But essentially what this does is it gives them powers to apprehend. And we're not even sure what that means. Because obviously there's a difference between apprehending someone and arresting someone. In essence, what we saw during the Zondo Commission was that they have in the past held people against their will, detained them against their will. We only know of one such case that came out of the Zondo Commission, but there's reasonably strong evidence for it. The point is, now you have this vetting provision, plus you have a power to apprehend, which means you can basically make somebody disappear. Also, everything is always classified. They operate in extreme secrecy. So the odds are that they can say, look, we've kept this person back and we've locked them up. And it's actually, we can't tell you why. Sorry, we can't tell you why. So yes, this is a very dangerous bill. It is as dangerous as people say. Okay, so when they define national security, right, they basically define it as any opportunity or potential opportunity to further national security interest. So it sort of uses its own name in the definition. So it's a circular definition. Or any threat or potential threat to national security. So the definitions are circular, meaning that they basically don't really mean anything. Because it still doesn't quite tell you what is it? Is it a danger? Is it an economic opportunity? So it expands things before this definition of national security came to the fore or was proposed in this bill. It was very much, you know, the law was very much focused on public safety. It was pretty clear that national security was about keeping people safe and keeping the country safe. Now we've got this new addition of opportunity and potential opportunity, and the idea that the government can go look for opportunities and potential opportunities outside of South Africa's borders. That is something one sees from the United States, the Central Intelligence Agency. It's something that you see from Russian and Chinese intelligence trying to further their organization, their country's, agendas within other countries, right? It's not something that one would expect from South Africa. This idea that you can go into other countries and look for opportunities. I mean, obviously, if there's a trade opportunity, you want to explore it. And you can then gain intelligence about that. But where do you then draw the line? How far do you go? Do you use interception or communications in that other country? And then how legal is that? You know, I mean, it's okay to, there's a law protecting your own people from interception, but what about the people of other countries? So, and here's the other thing about why this bill can turn South Africa into a security state, apart from these broad definitions. The bill also talks about the National Communications Center. Now, the National Communications Center is a facility in Pretoria where bulk interception takes place. In other words, bulk interception is also called mass interception. We don't know what's going on there, by the way. It's a very opaque, organization. There's no oversight going on there. But the idea is that you can record all communications of an entire nation, okay, in its worst form. And that's the stuff that emerged with the Edward Snowden revelations in 2013 when he came out with the information about the National Security Agency in the United States and how they basically eavesdrop on everybody. So the National Communications Center for South Africa supposedly scans the communication signals. I'm assuming it's from satellite signals and from probably also cables, because of course that's how communication travels. We have satellites and we have these massive undersea cables that link countries together. And if you can intercept at a single point where that all information passes through, if you can scan the information passing through that, that means you can basically look at everybody's information because of the way the internet is structured now. Or even us speaking here or talking on Zoom or sending WhatsApp, that stuff goes through servers that are outside of our countries, right? So it's basically, it's not confined. Now, according to law, if they have to want to intercept somebody's information and that person is in South Africa, right? So I'm talking to you and we're both in South Africa and our communications occur here. Then they need to get a warrant from the courts, right? But communication has changed now. And our really all communications are global now because our internet signals are all over the place. They cross our border. So the National Communications Center on paper is supposed to only catch signals of people in other countries, right? It's for foreign intelligence. So the idea is that they're listening to people speaking outside of the borders of South Africa and seeing if they, if there's someone planning a terrorist attack, right? So for example, you would listen to all conversations, but then you would pick up keywords, in conversations, in emails. So for example, to use a very old example, like a bombing of, terrorism plot, you know, being exploited. So they would listen for Al Qaeda, bomb, Al Shabaab, etc. That's a very sort of common example that people give. I mean, I can't even say that's a real example, but it is an example. So in essence, it's this very powerful spying technology. But they can also use it to spy on citizens domestically because of the way our information is passed through the internet. And the way they've set it up in this intelligence laws amendment bill is to say that in essence, there's going to be one judge overseeing this. The agency has to, or the intelligence officers have to apply to the judge if they want to do mass interception. And the judge is going to be assisted by two experts, whoever that is. And then this judge is going to be accountable to the minister, and the minister is going to be accountable to the president. So if you can think of the time of former President Jacob Zuma, imagine if one of his security ministers, which we know they were bad news, then appointed a judge to oversee this powerful interception facility. And could then remove this judge. So in essence, the power over this facility would lie with the presidency because they can ultimately appoint the judge or hire and fire the judge, basically. So there's no what we would call meaningful independent oversight of this powerful facility, meaning in the end that that it can be abused to spy on people. And one way to control the population, we know that well, is to monitor their communications. That is a major tool for oppressive governments, and this law will allow them to do that. Another issue, another reason why this can turn South Africa into an autocratic state is because it allows the legislation that lets the intelligence services spend money secretly, it allows that legislation to stand. They're two very old acts. They date from apartheid years that basically create a secret account, from which the state security agency can use to conduct its business, right? This account has never ever had an unqualified audit, so because the Auditor General has never had a good look at what they use this money for, because it's all classified, right? The reason why they can classify it is because you will probably recall the Protection of State Information Bill, which has been doing the rounds, I don't know, probably for the last decade. And it's supposed to replace the Secrets Act, right? Which is also an old piece of apartheid legislation that basically says you can go to jail, if you let out sensitive information, right? If you let out information that is a threat to national security. So you have those acts that allow for secret spending because obviously, you know, it's classified. We don't want to give our information away. That's a threat to national security. So not even the inspector general, not even the auditor general can know what we're doing. You've got that. And then you've got the State Secrets Act, which allows, the intelligence services to classify anything, really anything. And they decide what's classified. There's no external oversight. There's no the Joint Standing Committee for Intelligence, for example, in Parliament, or the Inspector General of Intelligence can't, for instance, say, no, listen, whoa, On what basis are you classifying this? So yeah, so those two secret accounts with that allows for secret expenditures. There's a lot of money that's gone into that over the years, because that account is set up so that one doesn't have to, so that they don't have to account for any money that they haven't used. If they don't finish, if they don't deplete the budget as part of, you know, the secret budget, then that amount just stays in their account, and they again get their normal allocation from Parliament. And we're talking about billions of rands. So that's money that you can fund an authoritarian state with, right? Then you have your listening apparatus, which is the National Communication Center, the bulk interception facilities, which means that you can basically intercept everybody's communications. And again, another important aspect to an autocratic state. Then you've got your Secrecy Act that can send you to jail. And to give you a quick example of that, a couple of years ago, I wrote an article for the Daily Maverick that was based on a PowerPoint presentation, a very general PowerPoint presentation with nothing secret in it, about the state security agency's basic operations. But they had decided to classify that, that very silly presentation with very shallow information on it that's in any case available in public policy. When they learned that I had this document, they sent a threatening letter to the editor of the Daily Maverick, Rick, and basically said that they're going to put us in jail if we don't hand this document over. So that is how they can actually use those laws to silence people for something so completely inane that really shouldn't be a secret at all. So yeah, I think that, I hope that answers your questions, but all the elements are there for this to become, for them to run an autocratic state. And that certainly seems to be their mindset. It doesn't appear to me that they're looking at this from a democratic angle.
Thanks, Heidi. I think for a country that prides itself, you know, on being a vibrant democracy, it's concerning that our government is pushing forward this bill, and it's concerning for our ability to hold the government accountable for their actions. Just as, you know, as we wrap up this conversation, how can people support the work that you do at Intel Watch to make sure that others are aware of this bill and its implications?
Well, a lot of it's been in the media, so there's a ton of information out there that you can read for free. And our website is IntelWatch, IntelWatch.org.za. And we've got a ton of information on there as well about the act. Right now, the comments are closed, right? The public comments are closed. But there will probably come a time where we will take this issue to court, because my feeling is that they're going to pass this act. The ad hoc committee that's now supposed to be, you know, I've listened to the public, you know, and rewrite the law and part, you know, put it on the president's desk. My feeling is that they don't quite understand the dangers of it. That's just my observation of them. So the odds are that this thing is going to pass, and then we're going to need public support. And public support can come by sharing stuff on Twitter, sharing stuff on Facebook, sharing stuff on Instagram. If you use social media, any information about that, you know, if you can share that, there's a ton of great journalists writing about this. And then, of course, we've done petitions as well about this. I mean, we, for instance, did a petition for nonprofit organizations with the Campaign for Free Expression. So if people can be on the lookout, our Twitter handle is at IntelWatch News. So we are, yeah, we're on the platform formerly known as Twitter. We're on there, and so we put announcements on there. And yeah, the best thing that people can do really is to, when they see this stuff coming up in their feed, is just to retweet and spread the news. But yeah, in the end, I think we will have to take this matter to court. So hopefully there are a bunch of people that are angry about it. So hopefully there's enough interest to actually, you know, take the matter to court. But yeah, it's very likely that it's going to end up there.
Heidi, thank you so much for your time. And to our audience, if you'd like to follow Intel Watch on X, you can follow them at Intel Watch News. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Brucie. And yeah, it was an absolute pleasure talking to you.
Thank you for listening to Just Us and the Climate, a production of the Climate Justice Coalition. To find out more about the coalition and our work to advance climate justice, visit climatejusticecoalition.org. If you enjoyed this podcast, please subscribe and share it widely. The more people it reaches, the more we can help grow the movement for climate justice. This podcast is made possible thanks to the financial support of the Open Society Foundation.
You've been listening to another production from Solid Gold Podcasts.